I began my message in a slightly unusual way. As you know, Victor Street is primarily a Hispanic congregation. So I spoke there on December the 6th, and I said, today is Cinco de Mayo. And I got a lot of strange looks. I said, it is Finland's Cinco de Mayo. December 6th is their Independence Day. That's not entirely out of keeping with where we're going to introduce things today. It's December 9th. It isn't any special day in Finland's history that I know of. But these are pictures of some of the Finnish army during the Winter War that started in 1939 on November 30th and lasted until the 13th of March, 1940. Something very interesting about this war. When you look at the size of the Soviet Union, almost that entire map, except for water, is the Soviet Union. But then you see that little circle up there near the top of the map. That circle is much larger than the country I was trying to demark by it, Finland. Finland is within that circle. Well, here on this map, the green area is Finland, but you know how huge Russia is compared to Finland. The Winter War was fought in 1939-1940 against Finland. War was not even declared by the Soviets. They just went across the border. It's sort of like December 7th, 1941, the Day of Infamy. There were three times as many soldiers on the front on the Russian side of the lines as on the Finnish side. There were 30 times as many Soviet aircraft, 100 times as many Soviet tanks. Furthermore, it had only taken 1 week with less than 1,000 casualties for the Soviet Union only a few months earlier to decimate the eastern portion of Poland. And they estimated that they would have all of Finland conquered in 2 weeks. They expected to just push right on through and wipe the Finns out, completely decimating them. That is not at all what happened. Not at all. They had one particular battle there that became known as the Sausage War. In the Sausage War, it was the one time that Soviets managed to get behind Finnish lines. It was the one and only time that they succeeded in doing that. But it happened that they got there and were ready to attack the camp right as the Finnish cooks were making sausage soup. And the Russians were so badly fed that they broke ranks and went straight for the kettles. And they got wiped out. Here they are piled up like cordwood, which is basically how they were piled up after battle after battle after battle. Now, something that the Finns had that was their secret weapon, they always brought their saunas with them. Now, that is not a sauna, despite all the propaganda you've heard through all the years. The word is sauna. But they always had their saunas, and the Finns swore by that as being part of how they were equipped to fight. There was one particular battle I called the Battle of Suomalaisalmi. And in the Battle of Suomalaisalmi, what you had was a forest a very thick forest going through swampland, and the Soviets had troops marching. The only place that they could march was on this narrow logging trail. So there they were. Finns waited for them to get in about 20 miles, and then they attacked at the front. There wasn't any place for the Russians to go except to stay right there on the trail. They attacked at the rear, so they couldn't retreat. And then the Finns, who were excellent cross-country skiers, came in. And the Finns lost 400 casualties. The Soviets suffered 9,000 casualties. What ended up happening was after 4 months, the Soviets managed to settle with the Finns and take over the territory that you see marked in the light 10. They never conquered all of Finland. They were able to reach a settlement. They did take over some land. But all of the Finnish people that were there moved west, so they took over land that was uninhabited. The Russians didn't conquer those areas. It was that as part of the settlement, they were given those lands. It was quite an embarrassment for the Soviets. As we look at Genesis chapter 26, we are going to see an unlikely victor, not in a war, but an unlikely victor as Isaac was living in the midst of Philistine territory, and he was the one that the Lord blessed. It was not the Philistines who were being blessed by God. An unlikely victor, because God blessed Isaac with wells of water. Let's look at the map. I'm going to have to show another map when we get further into the passage. But you notice the area of Gerar, that's where the king is that he's dealing with. But then at a later point, he's going to move to Beersheba, and then there will be another location where he will be at another point. When you talk about kingdoms, they tended to be small. And so when we see Abimelech, he is a Philistine, but he's not king over all of the Philistines. He's king over the area surrounding Gerar. And as you remember, Isaac lived in his area. Look back at Genesis chapter 26, starting at verse 1. There was a famine in the land besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham, and Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. He was king over the Philistines that were in Gerar. Not over all of the Philistines everywhere, but in that immediate area. In verse 2, the Lord told him not to go down to Egypt as his father had done. And notice that he told him in verse 3, "Dwell in this land, I will be with you and bless you. For to you and your seed I give all these lands and will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father. And I will make your seed multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your seed all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." Now we saw that even though verse 5 makes it sound as though the Abrahamic covenant is conditional, it is not. What we have here is an extension, because back in Genesis chapter 22, when Abraham was willing to offer up Isaac, Because of that obedience, God gave him more than what he had initially promised. And what God is saying here to Isaac is, I will give you the more that I gave to Abraham because he obeyed. If Abraham hadn't obeyed, God would still be fulfilling the promise to and through Isaac. But because of Abraham's obedience, the blessing is increased. Notice here, God is making promises. And what we see in the passage is, despite who and what Isaac is, and despite his failures, God is blessing him. So now, as a result of that, Isaac knows that he has a blessing that he's going to be able to pass down through his lineage. So we're going to have a compression of time here in Genesis 26 as we go through verses 12 through 33. And we are going to see a summary of what was the most important thing that happened in Isaac's life. He continued to receive God's blessing despite, shall we say, having superior forces lined up against him, ready to take it away from him. And despite all of that, God blessed him just as the Finns were blessed in the Winter War and were not decimated as everyone expected that they would be. Let's start at verse 12. The first section here will be verses 12 through 16. The Lord's blessing brought opposition in Gerar. Isaac had had a very comfortable relationship as he was there, and he was welcomed, even though the king of Gerar was not at all pleased that he had misrepresented Rebekah as being his sister, but they were welcomed into the land. Notice what it is that Abimelech told all of his people in verse 11. So Abimelech charged all his people, saying, "He who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death." But as we come to the passage now, things have changed. Things have become a little different. Because Isaac is becoming very rich, very powerful, and they're becoming nervous. In verses 12 through 14, the Lord's increasing blessing upon Isaac caused the Philistines to envy him. In verse 12, "Then Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year a hundredfold, and the Lord blessed him. The man began to prosper and continued prospering until he became very prosperous." Did you notice a word that was emphasized in that verse? Prosper. He prospered exceedingly, for he had possessions of flocks and possessions of herds and a great number of servants. So the Philistines envied him. Now notice, he sowed in that land and he reaped in that same year a hundredfold. So he has a container of seed, and the number of seeds that he harvested was 100 times as much as he planted. Now, take a look just for a moment at Matthew chapter 13. We are all very familiar with this passage. It's the parable of the soils. In Matthew 13, verse 23, it's going to talk about the seed that has fallen in the good ground. "But he who receives seed on the good ground is he who hears the word and understands it. who indeed bears fruit and produces, some a hundredfold, some 60, some 30. 30-fold was magnificent production in that day. 10-fold would be a pretty good crop. 30-fold is tremendous. 60-fold is wow. And 100-fold, that's really doing great. By the way, something I need to say here, this is a commercial break for the moment. You've often heard people talk about fruit, and you know, they want to see fruit in people, and they're busy trying to inspect how much fruit people have. What's fruit in a grain crop? If you plant wheat, what's the fruit? Wheat, the seed. Yeah, you can eat some of it, and you have to plant some of it. But the fruit is the seed. Okay, and what in the parable did Jesus describe or define the seed as? The word. The seed is the word, so what's the fruit? Fruit is the word. What he's talking about in that parable is the word goes forth, in particular, the word that gives life, and in some it germinates, life is produced, and those who mature bring forth ripe fruit. In other words, they're able to share the word with others. Is that a little different definition of what the fruit is than what most people running around think fruit is when they start talking about that passage? It's being able to reproduce the word. But long before we're able to reproduce the word, before we're able to share the word with others, we were germinated. There was life in us. Now, the farmer doesn't get any benefit until he's able to harvest a crop, right? But even before he's able to harvest a crop, he looks out and he says, "My field is green. There's life." Bear that in mind, because when you talk with people, they'll often want to twist that passage and turn it in some ways that are not productive. Okay, let's go back to Genesis chapter 26. Isaac has been blessed. He has 10 times as much of a crop as a good crop. He's been blessed. But where is he? He's out in the desert. This is a place that doesn't have much water. And we're told that besides that, he's prospering tremendously in verse 13. And he has possessions of flocks, possessions of herds, and a great number of servants. And what's the common denominator that they all need? Water. So, God said he was going to bless them. Well, I said that that blessing includes everlasting life, but it also includes that they needed to have their lives sustained. It includes water wells, wells that produced. That's one thing to have a well, but it's another thing to have a well that produces water. You can go out and dig and dig, and dig, and dig, and dig, and dig, and not have a dependable supply of water. You're in the wrong place, right? Now, we've looked at a few of these pictures before, but here we have a brick-lined, hand-dug well. Notice the size of those bricks, and then extrapolate that out to the size of this well. How would you like to have been the person digging this? This took a little while. That was a lot of work that went into this. It's not like having a modern well drilling rig and able to shove the casing down right as you're drilling. Nope, that's not how they did it. We're looking at a hand project. Here we have a fellow that's digging by hand. Okay, the digging's one part, but then you got to get the dirt out. That's what the bucket's for. That's a lot of work. The further down you get, the harder it is to get the dirt out of there. And did they know when they started digging that it was going to be a spot that they were going to get water? Get good, dependable water? Well, the Lord was blessing Abraham and the Lord was blessing Isaac. They were a lot better well drillers than the Philistines. God was blessing them. Furthermore, the Philistines started turning against them. So what is it that the Lord said? I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse the one who curses you. And lo and behold, they start getting envious, and they start saying, oh, we want to have those wells instead of Isaac, because look at how those wells are prospering him. My, if we couldn't just take those wells away from Isaac, then he'd lose the blessing and we'd have it. But they didn't realize. It wasn't the well that was blessing, was it? It was the God who prospered Abraham and Isaac that made it so that they could prosper with the wells that they had. Can you imagine the Philistines? They capture one of the wells. And then all of a sudden, why did the well go dry? Then they go after another well. It's producing just fine. And they take it over. What's going on here? Every well that we have fails, and every well that Isaac has does just fine. And isn't it funny? If they had enjoyed the association with Isaac and had allowed him to prosper and had sought to benefit him, they would have shared in his prosperity because their own wells would have done better. But there they are saying, oh, if we can just get him to move away, or if we can just take his well away from him. Well, let's make him move away by filling up his well and making him go away, and then we'll take the well, we'll clean it back out, and then we'll prosper. And it just didn't happen that way. So, Isaac is prospering. Is it because of Isaac? No. Is it because of the wells?
No.
No. It's because of God. But Isaac is prospering. And what happens? The Philistines look over them and they say, oh, we need to take that away from him. Funny thing, though. When the Lord blesses, they weren't in a position to take away the blessing. They could take away the wells, but they couldn't take away the blessing. They could take away the wells and they wouldn't be blessed when they took away the wells. But if they had been good neighbors to Isaac, they could have shared in the blessing. Well, now in verse 15, we find out what it is that they have sought to do. The Philistines had sought to ruin Isaac by stopping up his father's wells. So you can imagine them there. They're just there filling in those wells with all the rocks and all the dirt and everything else that they can throw down in there in order to make it so you can't drop a well bucket down there and get water out of it. So in verse 15, now the Philistines had stopped up all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham, his father, and they filled them with earth. And we had seen back in an earlier chapter where Abraham was prospered and had the wells dug, and the wells were doing very well, and as a result, Abraham was able to enjoy the prosperity that the Lord had given to him. So they say, let's fill up the wells. He'll move. When he moves, we'll dig the wells back out. Because the most important thing is, let's get him out of there, because he's got those wonderful wells and we've got greater manpower to go and dig those wells out, and then they'll be ours. So, verse 16, and Abimelech said to Isaac, go away from us, for you are much mightier than we. We don't like you around here. You're too powerful. You're too rich. You're having bigger and bigger and bigger herds, and your crops are doing so well, and you seem to be expanding and taking up more land, and here we are, and our fields aren't doing so well, our herds aren't doing so well, we don't have so much water. It kind of looks like you're taking away all the resources. You know, I've heard something like that about the United States in recent years, haven't you? Huh. Oh, well. It does seem that people have a hard time with someone being blessed. They like the idea of taking away the blessing if someone else is being blessed, instead of figuring out how can we get the blessing? Is there anything, any secret? Well, in the case of Isaac, the secret was to be nice to Isaac and to worship his God. I think there's a secret today, too. What do you think? Well, in verses 17 through 22, opposition to Isaac's efforts to reclaim his father's wells ended when he left Philistia. In verses 17 through 22, this opposition continued as long as Isaac stayed in the area around Gerar. But when he left that area, when he moved out of Philistine territory, then the opposition ended. In verses 17 and 18, Isaac reopened two of his father's wells that had been filled, and he named them what his father had called them. So there were some of these wells that had been filled up, and he goes around and has his men digging them out. And the name that he gave to them was the same name that his father had given to those wells. So verses 17 and 18. Then Isaac departed from there and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar and dwelt there. And Isaac dug again the wells of water which they had dug in the days of Abraham his father, for the Philistines had stopped them up after the death of Abraham. He called them by the names which his father had called them. Now, we have to give a little bit of background here. You remember the point where Abraham and Abimelech entered into a covenant? Remember when Phicol and Abimelech came out and they made a covenant with Abraham? Look at Genesis 21, starting at verse 22. And it came to pass at that time that Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, spoke to Abraham, saying, God is with you in all that you do. Now therefore, swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me. Now what had he done not that long before? He said, this is my sister. And there were all sorts of problems as a result of that. So don't deal falsely with me or with my offspring, my seed, but that according to the kindness that I have shown, I have done to you, that you will do to me and to the land in which you have dwelt. And Abraham said, I will swear. Then Abraham rebuked Abimelech because of a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized. Abimelech said, I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me. nor had I heard of it until today. Abimelech saying, you should have let me know earlier. I would have taken care of this, but this is the first time I've ever heard of this, and so on and so forth. And so then we have the making of a covenant, verse 27. So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two of them made a covenant. And Abraham set seven ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. Then Abimelech asked Abraham, what is the meaning of these seven ewe lambs which you have set by themselves? And he said, you will take these seven ewe lambs from my hand, that they may be the my witness that I have dug this well. This well isn't yours, it's mine. I dug it. Therefore, he called that place Beersheba, because the two of them swore an oath there. Now, it's going to seem a little odd, because in our passage, it's going to talk about now the name of that place was called Beersheba. And you say, wasn't it named back here in verse 21? That was Abraham's name for it. But as a result of the covenant that's entered into in chapter 26, other people started calling it Beersheba starting in Genesis 26. So in this passage, it's Abraham called it. Later, it's other people also started calling it. Thus, they made a covenant at Beersheba. So Abimelech rose with Phicol, the commander of his army, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. And Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, something that's going to last a long time, and called on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham stayed in the land of the Philistines many days. Okay, we had a previous covenant, and that previous covenant said, okay, this well is mine, and you've acknowledged that. Why is it that all of a sudden now they're wanting to take things from Isaac? Because Abraham died. And they don't realize that God has given this land to Abraham and his seed forever. So what is going on here with Isaac is a test humanly by people who say, oh, we made a covenant with Abraham. Abraham's dead. We didn't make any covenant with you. And God is going to establish Isaac not as a squatter, but as one with real rights that this country had to deal with, because Isaac is under the blessing of Abraham. He's under the Abrahamic covenant, which is not a short-term covenant. It is an eternal covenant that God has made. People think they're making covenants that last a lifetime. God says, not so fast. Because he promised the land to Abraham and his seed for how long? Forever. So, let's look again at verses 17 and 18. Isaac departed from there. Where is the there? Actually being in Gerar, the immediate vicinity. He moved a little further away, but he remained in the valley. He's in the same valley that he was in, that Gerar is in. Yeah, you can see there that we have a river. So we've got a valley, and of course the river is running through the valley, so he's somewhere within that valley, but he's moved a little further away from Gerar. But whose country, whose territory is he in?
Philistine.
Philistine country. It's still land that is controlled by the king of Gerar. And as he moves a little further out, he dug again the wells of water that they had dug in the days of Abraham his father. And the reason they're digging them, the Philistines filled them up. They said, Isaac's in this area, he's got these wells. And they went around and they filled up all the other wells, They weren't using the water, were they? Now, would you fill up a well that was in an area where Isaac wasn't if the well was producing? No, you'd graze your own herds there, wouldn't you? When they filled them up, they filled them up because they were dry. They weren't producing. When Isaac leaves an area, when Abraham leaves an area, where's the water? Someone shut off the spigot. Someone up there. God shut off the spigot. So they fill up these wells rather than using them themselves because they aren't very useful. But why would they fill them up? Oh, Isaac's going to come by and all of a sudden they're going to start producing again. Wherever Isaac went, the wells worked. When Isaac left an area, the well stopped working. Very interesting set of circumstances that are going on here. So they say, we better fill up these wells. They don't do us any good, but we don't want them to do any good for Isaac, because if he moves over here and finds this well that isn't doing anything, it's all of a sudden going to do well because God's going to prosper him. So, verses 19 through 22. The Philistines took two of Abraham's redug wells, two of the wells that Isaac redug that Abraham had originally dug, and they had filled up. So the Philistines took two of Abraham's redug wells, which Isaac then renamed for the contention that happened. But he also dug a well outside of Philistine territory, which did not provoke controversy. So he named it Rehoboth, because the Lord made room for them to be fruitful in the land. Okay, well, let's see. Yeah, if you look on this map, down at the bottom, you'll see Rehoboth. And so that's the other area. We have Gerar, Rehoboth, and then you'll see Beersheba in the middle of that box towards the right. Verses 19 through 22. Also, Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found a well of running water there. But the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, the water is ours, even though he dug it. So he called the name of the well Esek, contention, because they quarreled with him. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over that one also, so he called its name Sitna. Now I'm going to repronounce this Sitna. The most important thing when you look at Hebrew words is the consonants, not the vowels. If you have S, T, N, put some vowels in between there. Satan? Adversary. Adversity. See how that works? It's the same root from which the word Satan, opponent or adversary, comes from. And he moved from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over. Guess why? He moved out of Philistine territory. So he called its name Rehoboth, a wide space. Wide spaces, actually. Because he said, for now the Lord has made room for us, same root, and we shall be fruitful in the land. The Lord's going to bless us, is what he's saying. So he digs out two of these wells. There's plenty of water there. And here come the Philistines, and what do? They take it away. They've got superior forces. He has to retreat. He says, okay, you can have this. How well do you think they were blessed with those wells? I don't think so. they're saying things aren't going so well. They keep quarreling. They keep fighting with Isaac over wells. Any well that Isaac possesses does fine. The wells of these people who are opposing Isaac don't do so well. God has promised to bless those that bless him, to curse those that curse him. And lo and behold, that's what's happening. God promised that to Abraham, and did he not reiterate it to Isaac? Yes, he did. Earlier in this chapter, God said that he would bless him. So all the things that he has promised Abraham, he has also promised to Isaac. Notice then they moved down to Rehoboth area. They dug a well that's outside of the immediate area of where the king of Gerar is. Nobody opposed him over that well. Finally, he's able to enjoy the blessing that the Lord has given him without having someone wanting to fight with him over it. But from there, he ended up moving to Beersheba, which you remember, his father had dug that well, but the Philistines had taken that well. And Abraham entered into a covenant saying, these seven ewe lambs signify I was the one who dug it. This is my well. So, after God confirms the covenant to Isaac, Abimelech makes a treaty with him at Beersheba. Verses 23 to 33. Once Isaac moves out of their area, he's given them a lot of chances, hasn't he? He's stayed in their immediate area for quite a while. He tried to accommodate them. He ended up giving them wells when they came by and they wanted to argue over this well and over that well. He ended up giving the wells. They didn't get the blessing. They got the well. Isaac kept the blessing. But because they didn't get along with him, they were losing the blessing. Earlier times when they were having a friendlier relationship, they were being blessed. And now all of a sudden, he's out of their midst. And what do you think's happened? They've hit a real recession. Sort of like the United States has. Stock market crashed. All sorts of problems. Having car companies that are having to be bailed out, all the banks and everything else. And they were having an awful time there in Gerar. And you can just imagine what it was like to read the morning newspaper or to tune in to CNN News and hear what's going on. I mean, things were pretty bad. So all of a sudden they say, oh boy, we need a new treaty. We need a treaty with that country, that person that's being blessed. And so all of a sudden, they make another trip out to meet Isaac way over in Beersheba. And notice, that isn't in their river valley. It's a different valley. They go out of their area in order to have a covenant with him because maybe if we bless him, maybe we'll be blessed. Just as they had once upon a time figured out that if they blessed Abraham, they were blessed. But when they were trying to curse Abraham, they were cursed. And when they were trying to curse Isaac, they were cursed. So now they say, time for us to make a covenant. And that's what happens. What God had said in Genesis 12:3 is happening. Why would they want to make a covenant with this guy? I mean, after all, they didn't like him. They kept trying to move him away. They didn't want him in their neighborhood. They wanted him gone. He goes, and they search him out because they want to have a treaty with him. They're starting to figure out that there's something special about this guy. Just like they had figured out there's something special about Abraham. Genesis 12:3 is an extremely important passage. Because there were certain people that could see the blessing that was being given to Abraham right from the start. People like Melchizedek. There didn't have to be any fighting over wells with Melchizedek. Melchizedek was a priest of the God Most High. And he met Abraham and sought to bless him as Abraham also blessed him. But there were others that learned the lesson a little harder way. Like the city of Gerar. But then there were other people like King of Sodom. They never really caught on. Israel is a country with a very interesting foreign policy as a result of Genesis 12:3. So let's consider verses 23 and 24. The Lord first confirms the Abrahamic covenant to Isaac in Beersheba. Verses 23 and 24. Then he went up from there, Rehoboth, to Beersheba. And the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, I am the God of your father, Abraham. Do not fear. I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your seed for my servant Abraham's sake. He's saying, Isaac, I'm blessing you. Not because of who you are, because of your father. Specifically, because I chose him out and I entered into a covenant, I made promises to him. I'm blessing you because I made promises to him. Now we saw that the promises were expanded because of Abraham's willingness to sacrifice Isaac. But fundamentally, Isaac receives all the blessing that he receives because God entered into covenant with Abraham. And in this vision, God is reconfirming in a formal way the covenant to the seed of Abraham. He's confirming it to Isaac. So he says, I will bless you. I will multiply your seed for my servant Abraham's sake. Do not fear, for I am with you. Isaac has a pretty good idea. He's been there with me all along, and the blessing that I've enjoyed, that people have wanted to take away from me, has come because God entered into covenant with my father. Isaac is in a position to believe that God is going to remain faithful to him, because not only did God make promises to Abraham, but God is reconfirming it directly to him. In verse 25, his response is to worship the Lord at Beersheba, to dwell there, and he dug a well. Now, when it says he dug a well, I think he redug the well that his father had dug there at Beersheba. earlier that we saw in chapter 21. Verse 25. So he built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord. He pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants dug a well. Whenever he digs a well, he's planning to stay there a while. It's a lot of labor. It's a lot of work. But he knows it's going to be worthwhile. Because the Lord is with him. The Lord has promised to bless him. And the only way that he's going to be able to multiply his seed is for Isaac and his family to stay alive and to prosper. In verses 26 through 29, Abimelech wanted to make a treaty with Isaac because the Lord blessed him. It is because of this blessing that Abimelech has finally come around to wanting to bless Isaac. Verse 26, then Abimelech came to him from Gerar with Ahuzath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the commander of his army. And Isaac said to them, why have you come to me since you hate me and have sent me away from you? But they said, we have certainly seen that the Lord is with you. So we said, let there now be an oath between us, between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm, since we have not touched you, and we have done nothing to you but good, and have sent you away in peace. That's revisionist history. Isaac said, okay, fellows, why are you here? You've been pushing me around for a long time here, and you've been taking away all my wells. Have you come all the way out here to take away this well too? Well, they recognize finally the Lord isn't just blessing Abraham. We got it figured out that God blessed Abraham. But after he died, surely he didn't have any use for Isaac. But now they can see he was blessing Isaac as well. Huh. Maybe that's why every time Isaac dug a well, it did well. And every time they took it, it didn't seem to do them very much good. So they thought they had to keep taking new wells away from him, but they just didn't work. Sort of like one of my wife's favorite stories of my father. My father had a rental yard, and we had some push lawnmowers, you know, the real type push mowers. And there were these two old guys, and every Saturday they both be in to see who could get there first to rent that one push lawnmower first. And then the other one would have to wait his turn to be able to mow his lawn. And they always were bidding against each other to buy this lawnmower from my father. Because they thought it was just a super lawnmower. I mean, it cut their grass so nice. They had owned lawnmowers before, but the problem was it wasn't long and their mowers would get out of adjustment and they wouldn't mow their lawn. So this was almost a magical lawnmower. It just was always, it just worked just great. And so they were bidding it up many times the price that it was worth. And that. But my father just enjoyed them there saying, well, I'll give you this much. The other one would say, well, I'll give you this much. And, you know, they just kept ratcheting the price up there. And Dad knew that if he sold it, it wouldn't be long, and it would be the worst lawnmower in the world, and it wouldn't work, and then they'd be angry at him. So little did they know, sometime during the week, when it was quiet, my father would take a piece of newspaper, and he'd be going back and forth with reel like this and make sure that the adjustment between the bed and the blades was just right. And every week, he would adjust the bed and get it so it was just right for them the next Saturday. And then he would be entertained by the two of them fighting to see which one could rent it first and which one could outbid the other one to be able to buy it. And that's sort of the situation that's going on here. Abimelech is saying, well, I guess we can't own this blessing, but maybe we can have a treaty with you. Maybe we can share in your blessing. Look at how God has worked things out so that they finally saw the light and figured out that they needed to bless Isaac rather than to curse him. So, in verses 30 and 31, Isaac and Abimelech made a mutually binding treaty. So he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. Then they arose early in the morning and swore an oath with one another. And Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. Isaac said, well, maybe now they'll start treating me the way that they said that they always did when they said that they sent me away in peace. Notice he sent them away in peace. He did to them exactly the opposite of what they had done to him. Why? What was it besides God saying, I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse? What else did he say in that verse, Genesis 12:3? Be a blessing. Isaac is supposed to bless them. He is supposed to bless those who have taken the Abrahamic covenant seriously. They are blessing him. He needs to bless them in return. Verses 32 and 33, the day of the treaty with Abimelech, Isaac's servants reported that they had found water as they were digging a well, so he named it Sheba, oath, and the city is called Beersheba, well of an oath, to this day. And it came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him about the well which they had dug and said to him, we have found water. So he called it Sheba, oath. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba, well of an oath, to this day. We saw in Genesis 21 that Abraham called it well of the oath because there was the well and they had reached a covenant. But this is not talking about, this is just Isaac calling it. Earlier in this chapter, Isaac called certain wells the same name that his father had called them. But this one caught on. Other people knew that there had been a peace treaty that had been reached here, and other people started to call it by that name as well. Something else that's important to notice here, notice in verse 31, Abimelech arose early in the morning, and they entered into the covenant that morning, and then they left. It was after they left that the Lord blessed Isaac with a producing well there. Isaac had moved there. Remember, he pitched his tent, as we were told. Look at verse 25. Built an altar there, called on the name of the Lord, pitched his tent there. And they dug a well. But those wells, even if it's redigging a well, that's going to take a while. It's a lot of dirt to be moved. So he sat there, waiting for the servants to dig that well. And wouldn't you know it, the Lord timed it. So the day that water came was the day that he blessed Abimelech by entering into a mutual covenant with him. Isaac is an unlikely victor. Just like those Finns in that little country, you wouldn't expect that they would have held out for 4 months with the Russians never conquering the whole country, when in only 2 weeks, with less than 1,000 casualties, the Soviets, only a few months before, had decimated the eastern portion of Poland. I didn't tell you one thing. One of the things that had happened between the time of the battles there in Poland and the attack on Finland, Stalin had a purge. And in his purge, over 50% of the officer corps of the Soviet army went into gulags. And into prison. And what they did was they put party loyalists in charge of the army. And then as a result of them having lost so badly in Finland, they decided that they had to pull those commanders who had been put into prison out and put them in charge of the Russian army again. The dangers of political correctness ought not be lost on our generation. Shall we pray? Father, we do thank you for you showing vividly how it is that you kept your word to Isaac just as you kept your word to Abraham. Remind us that you will keep your word to Israel throughout all of its generations. And remind us also that you will keep our word to us for all eternity. We have everlasting life as your immutable promise to us. You will be with us just as Jesus promised. He would never leave nor forsake us. Cause us to live our lives in light of the certainty that we have because of your guarantees to us. And we thank you for this in Christ's name. Amen. Steve.
John, in 26, 2 and 3 there, where he was supposed to snap it down to Egypt, etc., sojourn in the land, and then he went to Gerar. When you were speaking, it almost seemed like, maybe I read it wrong, but it almost seemed like you were saying, the text reads that when he left Philistia, things started to go better, but it almost seems like you were implying that he shouldn't have been there, and I was just trying to reconcile the sojourning part to the Gerar and all that.
Let me make note in 2b. Do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land of which I shall tell you. God hasn't yet revealed himself beyond that. He's living in the land that is part of the promise to Abraham. But when he gets to Beersheba, God reveals himself again to him. This is the point where he can say, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be. I believe that he was without revelation as to exactly where it was that he was supposed to be. Yeah, and he was told specifically, don't leave the land, especially don't go to Egypt. It's within the land that God has given to Abraham, but the point where God fulfills the last part of verse 2 seems to be when he got to Beersheba. So up until that point, he's having to say, where should I be? I don't have any clear revelation other than I'm supposed to be in the land. God is clearly continuing to bless him, so God isn't moving him geographically by not giving him enough water. Is he suffering a lack of water? Is he suffering a lack of crops or livestock? God isn't even hinting at him to move. The pressure starts coming, and as the pressure comes, it's clear that these are no longer people who are blessing him, but they are people who are cursing him. That's the point where he takes it that he ought to move, and when he does so, he goes to one place, then, and he says, okay, this is where we will be fruitful. For one reason or another, he moved to Beersheba. And when he moved there, that's where the Lord revealed himself to him. So he didn't have guidance that was saying negatively, don't go to Gerar. When the time and place was right, God revealed himself further.